That was the year.
Recreating notable events of passing time. Reviving memories of men and women who have contributed to the history of a modern world.
...1921, that was the year...
Paris, January 28th.
This night, the Allied powers have agreed upon a plan for war reparations. One...
Germany shall pay over 42 years a series of annuities ranging from 2 billion gold marks to 6 billion gold marks.
Two...
Germany shall pay to the Allies for 42 years a tax of 12.5% of her total export trade.
Paris, April 15.
The government of France will seize the entire valuable Ruhr industrial and mining district, levy a heavy tax export therefrom. Unless the German government shows intent to meet the demands of the Allies, and unless the German government makes a substantial payment on the balance due the Allies on May 1st of 20 billion marks.
Paris, April 30.
The Reparations Commission today demands that Germany turn over immediately to the Allies securities and titles of interest held by the German government or German private citizens in oil wells and mines in Russia, Austria, Hungary, Bulgaria, and Turkey. Concluding with the informative advice...
The Reparations Commission will hold the securities handed over by Germany at the disposal of the Allied powers that may desire to acquire them, and will undertake the administration of such securities as may not be immediately claimed by said powers.
Following counterproposals by Germany, virtual refusal by the Allied governments to consider any deviation from original demands, the resignation of the German cabinet, and the formation of a new cabinet, newly appointed Chancellor Wirth addressed the Reichstag...
Acceptance means that we declare our readiness to bear in voluntary labor the heavy financial burdens demanded year by year. Refusal would, however, mean surrendering the basis of our entire industrial activities. And as a consequence, dismemberment of our economic body, already too greatly weakened, and the sackling of our entire industrial life. And the effects might even be more terrible for our political existence and our realm. Ladies and gentlemen, the new government, after reflection, advises you in all confidence to accept the ultimatum.
The Reichstag voted 221 to 175 to yield to the demands of the Allies.
Paris, May 30.
The German ambassador to France delivers to the Reparations Commission a note setting forth, one...
Germany has paid 150 million marks.
Two...
Germany has delivered bonds to the amount of 200 million marks.
Three...
Germany holds at the disposal of the Commission 15 million gold marks.
Thus completing the payment of 1 billion marks gold due the following day.
1921. That was the year...
Death stalked the U.S. capital city, removing from public life four of the nation's most noteworthy men.
Aged 71, Champ Clark, Democrat. For more than a quarter of a century, a spectacular figure in national politics. For 8 years, Speaker of the House of Representatives.
Age 69, Philander Chase Knox, Senator from Pennsylvania, former Attorney General under Theodore Roosevelt, and former Secretary of State under William H. Taft.
Age 61... Knox's colleague from the same state, Senator Boies Penrose, Republican boss of Pennsylvania.
Age 57, Franklin Knight Lane, former Secretary of the Interior under Woodrow Wilson, and father of the government railroad in Alaska.
1921 also saw the passing at the age of 87 of Venerable James Cardinal Gibbons, Archbishop of Baltimore, Dean of the American Hierarchy of the Catholic Church. In that year, too, in his 82nd year, died beloved Marse Henry, Colonel Henry Waterson, editor of the Louisville, Kentucky Courier-Journal, famous among many picturesque Americanisms for his repetition during the World War of the explosive denunciation...
To hell with the Hohenzollerns and Habsburgs!
And on August 2, in the Hotel Vesuvius, in his own native city of Naples, Italy, passed the soul of the man who will probably forever be acclaimed as the world's most colorful, most romantic operatic figure, Enrico Caruso, leading tenor of New York's Metropolitan Opera Company. For 18 years, Caruso had realized in his 48th year that the end was close. Canceling all engagements, leaving for all time the revered boards of the old Met, he returned to his birthplace, there to pass away in the presence of his stepmother, his wife, his daughter, his son, and his brother. The Radames, the Canio, the Rodolfo, the Pinkerton of Caruso were now just memories.
"1921, that was the year.
Limerick Island, March 7. In the early hours of morning, a car halts in front of the home of ex-Mayor Michael Lucalligan. Several men emerge, scuttle over the garden wall, advance to the door of the house, and knock.
Who is it?
This is a searching party. We're looking for two officers.
Oh, just a minute.
We want you, O'Callaghan.
Oh, no. Michael, look out!
Leaving the ex-mayor fatally wounded, the raiders hurry on to the home of Mayor George Clancy.
Who is it you're looking for?
You know who we're looking for, Mrs. Clancy. Now get out of our way and let us pass.
No, you're not going
in there. Get away from that door, Mrs. Clancy.
No. Oh.
There's Clancy!
Clancy lingers in agony, to die an hour later, his wife senseless on the floor beside him. The raiders rush on toward the residence of another political opponent, drag him from his bed and into the night. His lifeless body was discovered several hours later. On May 25, the Dublin's Customs House was burned by Sinn Feiners, followed by a pitched battle between the raiders and the hated Black and Tans. Thus, the hectic history of Ireland advanced until...
December 6.
A treaty was signed between Ireland and the mother country, creating the Irish Free State, providing for her the same local autonomy enjoyed by Canada, Australia, and South Africa.
1921, that was the year.
In one room of a suite in the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Montreal, Canada, the beaming mustache countenance of an ex-president of the United States shines down upon his smiling wife.
Well, my dear, now we're both happy.
Yes, Will. Both Mr. Roosevelt and I wanted you to be president. And you were the 27th president of the United States of America. Oh, you've always looked forward to a seat upon the bench of the Supreme Court, and now you're the Chief Justice.
Yes, yes.
I wonder if Mr. Harding knows what he's done for you, Will.
No. No, Helen. No one knows what this appointment means to me. Not even you.
And William Howard Taft realized his lifelong ambition on the following July 11th as he took office and became the 10th Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States.
1921, that was the year.
As millions of Americans listen in to their pioneer radio receiving sets, on this third anniversary of the signing of the World War Armistice, November 11, 1921, they hear broadcast from Arlington Cemetery, the nation's military Valhalla near Washington, D.C.
Following the prayer by the chaplain, we have just observed 2 minutes of absolute silence in reverence for America's unknown soldier. Now, President Harding is stepping forward. He's holding in one hand the Congressional Medal of Honor, and in the other, the Distinguished Service Cross. Now he's pinning them upon the draped coffin.
In accordance with this act, I bestow these honors upon the unknown American.
Now, Lieutenant Jacques, the Belgian representative, is stepping toward the casket.
Comrade in arms, we know neither your name, nor your age, nor your birthplace. We know one thing only. You gave your life for us. If we are victorious today, we owe it to your sacrifice. The sacrifice of so many others. The sacrifice which every soldier was ready to make. In the name of the King of the Belgians, in the name of the government and of the nation, I bring you the last homage we can possibly bring you by bestowing upon you our Croix de Guerre.
And America's unknown soldier was laid to his final honored rest, dedicated to everlasting peace.
"1921, that was the year.
That in Irving Berlin's gorgeous spectacle, the Music Box Review, theatergoers first thrilled to this lovely ballad production number.
Music is the life.